there, neighbors, and welcome to the Blind Handyman Show, recorded at the Little Ranch House on Southwood Drive right here in Lufkin, Texas. August 10th, show number 88, is that right?
88.
Number 88, all right. For the next hour, we're going to talk about building, repairing, and maintaining, all designed, of course, with the blind in mind. Here are the hosts for the Blind Handyman Show, Don Shaw.
Tom, can you believe you've done that intro 88 times as of right now?
And I'm still reading it.
What a deal. Man.
Oh, I'm still reading it here to make sure I do it just right. I have orders from the producer and creator to read it word for word. Don Patterson, ladies and gentlemen. That's him.
Yes, I'm real glad to be here.
That describes him perfectly.
Yep.
Brand new headphones.
Yeah, and you look good in them, I might say. My name's Tom Houston. Here's the creator and producer of the Blind Handyman Show, ladies and gentlemen, Phil Parr.
All right.
I can't wait until we get in Houston and I get to do that.
One, two.
Your mic.
No, my mic didn't work. What happened?
There you go.
There he is.
I guess my third finger.
Did you just not have me up or what?
I guess that was it.
I'll be darned.
I didn't want you to speak out of turn or anything. You know.
I don't want
to. Trying to keep you in line.
How you like those phones, Pat?
I love them.
You like those closed? They're closed headphones.
Yes, you can't hear anything.
You can't hear anything except what you hear.
I guess Thomas was doing his imitation of Bill O'Reilly. He'll cut people's mics off when they get out.
Does he?
Sure, when they say something you don't want them to say. You always cut them off. Yeah.
Some Democrat something.
Just remember, I'm in charge, guys.
Please remember this. A kiss is just a kiss. Who did that song originally?
It came from the movie Casablanca.
How about that?
Uh-huh.
I knew you'd know.
Boy.
Well, welcome to the 87th Blind Handyman. 88th Blind Handyman Show.
Man.
Hot day in Texas. 90 degrees in Texas. This August, nothing exciting's happened. My wife is out of town, and so is Don Shaw's.
Yep.
And, well, whoopee.
What a deal.
My wife won't be back till, well, I'll see her again Friday. So this morning, you know, call me at 7. Last night, the last thing she told me, I will. Well, I called her at 7, 7:10, 7:15, 7:20. Finally, at 8:15, she called me. Well, my phone was on silent. And hell, you expect, you know.
What a deal.
I don't, you know. You're just not thinking it. She's in San Antonio, so.
San Antonio, what a deal.
Which children did she take?
She took Tiffany. Tiffany will be 13, can you believe this, Saturday.
Tiffany will be
13 years old Saturday. That's
My
unbelievable.
Goodness gracious.
Kimberly's 17. Kimberly's 17. She took Tiffany and Kimberly. And they're going to SeaWorld. This hotel they're staying at, there's an IMAX theater there. It's connected to a big mall. They're right close to the Riverwalk and the Alamo and all that. And they're going to SeaWorld today and to spend the day. So big time in San Antonio. I sure am glad I stayed home.
Yeah, but the Mexican food is really good.
We'll have that in Austin Sunday.
Yes, sir.
And besides that, if you went back to San Antonio here in another month or so, you may be able to listen to nothing but the Blind Handyman Show on the San Antonio Reading Radio Service.
They did ask for copies of the show.
So they did, didn't they?
We've sent them on what's that cat? I can't remember that boy's name over there. I guess Joe McMullen probably is involved in all that. It's our friend.
Larry
Johnson. That's the guy's name. It's exactly right. So anyway, maybe we'll be on the San Antonio reading service.
Yeah, what
and,
a deal.
Speaking of November,
yeah,
and, someone was speaking of November.
We were speaking of
you
that,
folks,
weren't we?
I did mention November a while ago.
You folks who want to go, quick, stop keeping it a secret and let us know. We need your help. We're just about there. Three or four more people, and we can call it a done deal, and folks can start booking airfares. But we sure need several more folks. Starting the 5th of November, we'll tape on the 7th. That'll be Sunday morning. Saturday, we're going to spend the day talking about blind things. We have several speakers that are going to come talk to us. Sunday afternoon, we're going to do some demonstrations of things like Gold Wave.
Yeah.
Recording program. And the Victor Reader Standalone and the new PlexTalk unit that does everything. And Bookport and several of those little things. Like anybody want to demonstrate any pieces of equipment they have, we'll come on and we'd love to have you. 936-634-9500. We'll tell you all about it. Okay? All right. Thomas?
Okay. All righty. This is a question on a car battery. I don't know how much we know about car batteries or cars or whatever, but here we go.
All right.
Is it possible for a battery for a car or van to work today and not tomorrow?
Yes.
I can answer that, yes.
Definitely.
Yes. Yes.
This is, of course, our trusty 2000 Dodge Caravan. I think we need a new battery as it fails to start on its own, just a tick, tick, tick. Another opinion we got while this hunk of junk sits in a parking lot is the car needs a new brain. Remember, for that opinion, or reason for that opinion, is that the car can be and was jump-started with cables. Now, it ran a minute or so and quit again. Any opinion at this point is appreciated. Thanks, Lee.
Well, let me say this. If you started it with cables, you could be, you may have lost the alternator. They say there's some diodes. You're not supposed to do that with
cars these days.
You're not supposed to do that anymore with cars. You're not supposed to start them with, you're not supposed to jump start cars anymore. There's a diode there. And the thing diodes do, diodes only pass electricity one way. And if you force electricity back through that diode, you may have lost the alternators, what may have happened to you. So, but, you know, you think about a battery working one day and not working the next. It's got to die sometime.
Oh, I've seen it happen.
Yeah,
on a caravan, in fact.
Also, though, I think on the alternator, well, you're right, it wouldn't charge that battery.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't, if you had a new battery, it wouldn't keep the car from starting.
Yeah.
And so it said if it started and then ran, of course, also some when the battery gets so low, sometimes the car just won't run. You might, but there's a definite, I think your friendly, you know, a lot of these multiple service shops like tires, batteries, some, that they can tell you real quick if you've got a dead cell.
Any auto parts can do a test.
My first take would be I know with the electronic ignitions, the brain thing can happen. My sister has a Honda. A 91 Honda, and it has over 100,000 miles, and she just replaced that under the advice of a Honda mechanic, because I told her it was either that or should we consider a new car. But the guy told her, said, you know, it cost her $250 for this the ignition. It's like the brain thing. But he said, you know, the car's good for another 200,000 miles, so she's up and running. But yeah, that can. But then I think when that really happens, I think the car just probably won't start at all when it finally just...
Well, you know, if how long has it been since you bought a battery? I mean, you know,
I would check. The first thing is easiest, you know, $55 will get you a good battery, so I'd check batteries.
Yeah, batteries first.
Get a decent battery, sure. Buy a battery first, but sitting in a parking lot. Where does this guy live?
I don't know.
Well, but it can happen that quick.
I wonder too. You was talking about you're not really supposed to jump cars. How about our little jumper starter things that we bought? You have, and are they not supposed to use those either?
I don't know about that.
That would be the same difference, wouldn't it?
It would be about the same.
To me like it would be.
Well, it would be about the same difference, I suppose. But they say that you're not supposed to, that's not a good idea to do that. And we, what did we do? What happened? And I can't remember what year that car was. We lost an alternator starting it that way, starting a Suburban we had that way.
But a battery, Don Patterson, you probably remember this. You and your sister, in fact, were the ones that took me to meet Mary, my wife, over at Rhonda's, because she had driven the caravan over there. Everything was fine. Drove it over there. Had been driving it. No problem. Got over there. Was ready to go. Got back in to start it. And zilch, zippo, nothing. And remember, you and Marlene took me over there, and we went and got a battery at the auto parts store and took it over, put it on the caravan, and that was the problem.
They
started right up.
Quick. So I would investigate batteries before... Electronic
Brains, because computer's going to be a couple hundred dollars. I mean, the computer's going to be expensive. For $60, you can buy a battery. Go
sure
buy a battery,
can.
And you know.
Yeah, check it out.
And at the same time, they would check out your alternator, probably. They can
check that real quick. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, hi, everyone. I just replaced my air conditioning filter with an Arm & Hammer model that cost about $4.39. Is there a difference in the more expensive ones that say they remove microparticles, etc.? Allegedly, this one I purchased will last 90 days. Hopefully, the complex will take on its responsibilities and replace it regularly, like they should. But since I have a dog, it seems to need to be done more often.
That's Darla Doll.
That is, in Tallahassee, Florida.
That's our friend Darla Doll from Tallahassee.
All right.
Well, we've discussed this several times. Those air filters, while they may remove more particulates from the air, are going to cut down on your airflow. There's no question about it. They make you move less air across your coil, so your house is not as cool as it would be with just a plain old trashy filter. I mean, you know, what's in the air that you, you know, go buy a dollar filter and change it every 30 days and don't worry about it.
Yeah, just change it every time the heat, I mean, the light bill comes in. Just change
just
your air
go
conditioner.
Change your air conditioner
filter. Track of it.
Yeah. Well, and I've heard, you know, if you're really concerned about it, it would wind up actually costing you a couple of dollars more a month, but not much more. I mean, if you paid $4.90 for that one, almost $5 or something, buy the cheap ones and change them every 15 days.
I
mean,
That's what I do.
Mine are washable. So every time the bill comes in, we just wash them and put them
in. Yeah, take it out and wash it.
Yeah.
Chili Blind Man Bob on the list, you know, the air conditioner guy said on the list, you know, if you use the throwaway filters, which I think is what he recommends also, the cheapy ones.
Yep.
He said if you have it and you can see dirt on the filter, if you've let it go that long, it already has cost you more than it costs to buy the filter to start with.
Right.
So change it every 15 days if you're worried about getting stuff out of the air.
Yeah.
I mean,
that,
you know, it's but those expensive ones that get a lot of stuff out cut down on your airflow. No question about it.
Okay, while we're talking about air conditioners, he says, I know this has been discussed here before. I did not keep it in my hard drive that being the care of an air conditioner, I've installed my air conditioners. I keep the filters clean, dipping them into light Clorox and dish soap, washing them clean with clear warm water. As with two smokers in the house, we do this once a week. The question is cleaning. We're using a small air unit to clean the dust, etc. Is there a place that I should be aware of to oil? My air conditioner is a Maytag and can handle easy 800 square feet of floor space. Thanks in advance, Gene.
No. It's a sealed unit. It's self-oiling. The motor oils itself. If it gets to where it doesn't run, throw it away. But it's sealed and self-oiling. I mean, if there was a place to, if you could get in there to oil it, you couldn't run it in the rain. It's sealed. It's a sealed unit. Don't worry about it. Just change the filter and go on.
All righty. Hello there. My wife is looking for a cleaner for paneling. Now, the paneling is not real wood. It's somewhat shiny and dark. I think that years ago this type of paneling was called Marlite or something like that. Thanks in advance for any ideas, Glenn.
Don Patterson?
Well, there's... I think Don Shaw talked about that they used the gold something, Don?
Yeah, the Scotch liquid gold is supposed to be good. And
there's several, you know, what you don't want to do on a synthetic paneling when it's not real wood, and of course I don't know what it is, and so I wouldn't want to give you a bum steer, is use something that would damage the finish. So I would travel real lightly, and I'll tell you the best, if you're around a big, you know, a Lowe's or a Home Depot, ask them. Because they'll tell you and they'll have the proper stuff. I'd be real careful with the you know, you might want to try just a light solution not Pino Pine, but
well, you can buy a wood cleaner called Murphy's Oil Soap. We just recently used it on our kitchen cabinets before we refinished them, and it is a wood cleaner, and it's good for cleaning cabinets.
But I think the key ingredient here is the fact that he said it's not real paneling. I mean, so
any kind of wood or synthetic, I guess, even.
Well,
it's natural.
It's glue board. I mean, it's
but yeah, and so maybe the paneling part, the that makes the pattern may not be very solid. You know, I don't know what it's made out of. It may be paper, of course, but it could be. A light solution of something. I mean, you know, good old
409.
409 is not bad.
409, if 409 won't clean it, you don't need it clean.
Yeah, sponge and warm water and 409, try that.
That's what I'd just soapy water in 409 or 409 in your a few drops of that in whatever kind of water you're using.
There is something for grease, a degreaser that you can buy, like people can do their kitchen cabinets, you know, from cooking a lot, and you might want to look into if that's where you are. I don't know which room in your house, you know, and what the color. You said dark, so I would try you know, you might ask around. I think be better.
Well, clean behind the couch, something you can't mess up, and see if you first.
Yeah,
work, and then you know, see how you do. All right, Tommy.
Does anyone know where one can buy fine gauge pins or nails, threaded if possible, around 0.01 or 0.015 inch in diameter?
Ooh, I don't know.
Between 1 and 2 inches long.
Threaded nails?
Yeah, this is Charles wants the answer.
What are threaded nails? I've never seen any.
I'm not sure.
Patterson? Don?
I don't know. I've never seen the nails, but I know there are several specialty places. I got into this looking up something else, and I can't remember exactly what I was looking, but I would get on the internet and type in fasteners, and I don't even know how to spell it. And there are certain companies that are devoted to making screws and all kind of fasteners and nails and all that, and you'll wind up with something on the internet.
Or we bought this picture frame kit one time that had all kinds of really small. It had about 10 little compartments in it with all kinds of little small nails and hooks and stuff. Might be a thought.
See, I don't know if he's saying threaded or ring shank. I mean, I'm not sure what a threaded nail.
I've never seen a threaded nail.
A ring shank nail I'm familiar with, and they come in all sizes, several sizes.
Yeah. And then concrete nails, of course, have a little rough thing around them. They're not threads. They're just little, I don't know what they would be called. But anyway, well, we have an interesting fellow that's going to be on in just a few minutes, an old boy that Patterson and I have known. I guess he was there when you started, when you came.
Yeah, a couple of years older than I.
I've known this boy. I guess he's probably started the school for the blind the same time I did. His name is Burns Weldon Taylor. And he's quite a fellow. We're going to talk to him in just a minute. More of the Blind Handyman Show. Hang on.
Talking about issues related to blindness.
Then Saturday night, it's on the live music and karaoke.
Sunday morning at 11 a.m., we'll record our 100th Blind Handyman Show.
And we've got something special planned for Sunday afternoon.
Then Sunday night, it's more live music and karaoke.
A great time to meet old friends and make new ones.
For more information, call 936-634-9500
or email philparr@txucom.net.
We'll see you in Houston in November.
We promise you a great hotel, a good time, and perfect weather.
Call 936-634-9500
or email philparr@txucom.net.
Listening to The Blind Handyman, the talk of the blind community. Our email address is blindhandyman@hotmail.com. If you would like to be a part of the show, leave us a phone number and we will contact you soon. Now here's more of today's show with Phil Parr.
I think the first time I ever saw this guy or was around him was in Bobby Doyle's camp, which was out on the side of Cottage K. by those little troughs that came out where we used to play ball. Burns Taylor, sir, how you doing?
Fine, how are you doing, Phil?
It's good to hear your voice, good to have you with us. And I read your poem that was in the Braille monitor, Braille form, about a year and a half ago, and then I read a little article about canes.
Raising
Cane. You do quite well. Your prose
still
are
doing it.
Prose are very nice. Have you written a book, or is this you just
I'm working on one?
Are you now? Yeah. Work of fiction, I suppose, or?
No, it's mostly biographical.
Really? Your life? How many times have you mentioned my name in it? Have you now?
I wrote about those story camps you were talking about.
Well, we did used to do those stories, and Bobby was so good at it, wasn't he?
Yeah, I even have one of his stories in there that I remembered. Verbatim, just about, I think.
A little story that he told us when we were kids.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I verified with him. He said, yeah, that's the way it went.
And he played that ukulele. So he was, his was by far the most entertaining camp, I think.
Yeah, Bobby's a natural entertainer. He always has been.
Always has been. Well, say hi to Don Patterson. He's here with us.
Hey, Don.
Hey, Burns.
I remember you.
Yes, sir. I was about 2 years behind you.
Yeah.
And I remember I know your sister. She was old. You know, she was older, and they would come and get you. Were a day student, right?
That's right.
Yeah, and one time, and she kind of took a liking to me, I guess, like I was the little guy, you know, and she'd bring me a Coke sometime, and I would sit in the car while they were waiting on you with your mom and you. Yeah.
That was my sis, yeah.
Yeah, she was neat, yeah. So it's been a long time, I calculate. I left in 1957, so how many years? About 47 years.
Wow.
That's same year I left.
Yes.
Yeah, you went on and graduated public school, didn't you?
Public school, right, last 2 years.
The last 2 years.
Well, see, in Houston, that was the first year they started their VI program. They just had this itinerant teacher that went to three or four. I had my choice to go to three or four different schools in Houston, and so I started the 10th grade here in Houston. I went to the 9th grade there at TSB.
Well, we weren't lucky enough to have the anything when
you bailed.
When we went to school, there were three of them, Bobby and I and Dolores Smith.
Yeah.
You guys will remember.
I do.
And another guy, Lawrence Williams, came tagged in.
I remember Lawrence, yeah.
We didn't have any, in fact, you remember the teachers asking us, well, how do we test you? And I said, well, let's don't say we test.
Yeah, I think Lawrence is a minister now. Someone was telling me that, and I have no idea of Dolores Smith what would have ever happened to her.
I don't either.
But y'all were all Austin people. Lived right there in Austin. Lucky dogs, got to go home every night.
Really?
Go home every day.
Every day.
How did you gravitate to El Paso, Burns?
On a job with the Texas Commission for the Blind.
Right.
Yeah.
1965. You don't have to calculate far to figure out I'd have about, 40 years or something with you.
40 years service.
Wow. I have stayed with them.
Yeah.
About 40 years in and still going, but.
We could retire.
I didn't. I left and I came back, and now my life is kind of has a certain circularity about it that I really haven't. I've sort of glimpsed the truth of it, but I haven't really followed it out to the end, but there's definitely a circular pattern going on.
Definitely.
I come back to the same agency in the same town 35 years.
The criminal returning to the scene of the crime, eh?
Something like that.
And so,
I've gone from, Houston to Austin to El Paso to Los Angeles to El Paso.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm coming back east.
So you're with the commission. This is what you do now.
Yes,
this is
with the Division of Blind Services now. Thank you.
Is that what they call it now?
Yes, sir. Part of the Department of Assistive and Rehabilitative Services.
Yeah.
You should have heard our switchboard gals trying to answer the phone with that one. That's a mouthful.
What did she say? What is she? What is she?
Now they say services for the blind.
That'd work as good as any.
Yeah,
so they have done that lumping of the five agencies together.
Yeah, there's four of us.
Four of us, that would be what? It would be, do you know?
It's us. It's Department of Health and Human Services, DHS. It's the Texas Rehab.
Yeah.
And the Deaf Commission.
And that was done to save money.
Right.
Yeah, you'd want to do that.
And to make, administrative efficiency. And so more efficient delivery services. That sort of thing.
The poor don't vote, so what the hell, right? They don't.
That's right. The deaf don't either.
Don't much vote, deaf folks don't much vote. And it doesn't really make any difference. Well,
Democrats are pretty good at getting out the dead vote.
They are. We have a lot of those Garden of Memories boxes here. They always say, "Who got the Garden of Memories box?" It's a joke here in Lincoln.
I think they're doing Ralph Nader this year. Challenging
Ralph
some.
Nader, yeah.
Yeah,
Ralph,
I think the Garden of Memory votes have gone to him.
Ralph, I hope so. Good God, why is he doing it? I don't know what to do. What to do?
I don't either. Because
he doesn't like Corvairs. He wants to outlaw Corvairs on the nation's highway.
I think he did that, didn't he? We got rid of those little.
Got rid of those.
Corvairs.
Corvairs.
Don Shaw is here, and a friend of mine named Tom Houston. There are two other guys that help us. Tom can see, and our county's dry, so Tom takes us across the river.
All right.
Yeah.
Drives the getaway guy. All right.
Don Shaw is that went to the blind school long after we did. Hell, they were letting boys and girls sit together in the auditorium when he went. Can you imagine?
Probably using canes and everything.
Well, they were.
Yeah,
teaching,
what a deal.
Teaching mobility training. It was quite a place. Yeah.
A country club.
Those days at the blind school. Are you coming this weekend to the Good Enough Thing?
I'm looking at that. Yeah, it looks pretty strong possibility I will be there.
Well, we are. We're coming up on Friday. We'll be there.
Are you?
Yes,
sir.
Yeah, I don't know, but I'll find out and call you back and tell you. Okay. Luann's made a reservation. She's in San Antonio this week at a CL, a continuing legal education seminar. So I'll call her and ask her and call you back.
Let me know.
Have you got a reservation?
I haven't yet, but I don't think I'll have a problem.
Oh, you won't. There's wall-to-wall motels there on 35.
Yeah, and I stay at the same place all the time. They know me.
Well, let me find out where we're staying, and maybe you can make a reservation there.
Where do you stay? Maybe we'll...
It used to be the North Park.
Yeah?
And it's changed now.
Is it a Holiday Inn or Sheraton?
I think it's a Wyndham now.
A Wyndham, but it's called the North Park.
Well, it was called North Park, and Wyndham now, but I can't get the rest of it.
All right. Well, let me check on that, and I'll get back. Maybe we can all kind of stay at the same. But we're going to the big jam session.
Yes, sir.
With all the guys.
I talked to Bob Tindall. He said he was on with you not too long ago.
He was. He did a little thing on the Good Enough, the dedication of the, I guess they'll call it the Good Enough Center,
Good Enough Performing Auditorium, I think.
Good Enough Performing Auditorium. And Forrest is going to actually be there.
Yeah. Bless his heart.
84 years old, so
yeah.
What a deal.
I studied with Mrs. Goodenough for 4 years. I played violin.
I did, too. I played cello. My girlfriend, I think, was a viola player or something, and I wanted to be with her, so that's so I got into cello. And, of course, I'm the guy that left.
As good a reason as any.
I thought it's good. We all, it's all we really care about. But anyway, moving on. I'm the guy that let the bass fall over, remember? Broke the neck, snapped the neck, and the bridge
And then the big guys came looking for him.
Oh, they did.
Snap his neck.
I thought they were going to kill me. Brian Shipman was not happy with me because he was.
Well, I'll tell you funny about Phil. Phil was. This is back in, I guess, our elementary, second, third grade. Phil was great for, he'd whip up these concoctions. And God knows what he had in there. Toothpaste, hair tonic, whatever he could find, he put in there. And he said, now, Burns, you need to ask your parents to buy this for you because it'll kill roaches. Man, it'll make your hair grow. It'll do everything. And he has this stuff in a bottle.
I want to be a chemist, I think, or something. I don't know what my deal was.
You were into marketing in those days, man. You were something else.
My, how life has changed. The blind chemist. That's one thing I don't know. I've never run across it. Everything
Still
else.
Still trying to sell a bill of goods.
Can you imagine that? Meek and mild Phil Parr trying to sell somebody a bill of goods. I can't.
See, I thought of a great idea for you, man. You need to team up with a guy, one of my favorite guys on TV. It's Bill Maher, and we could have the Bill Maher, Phil Parr, or the Phil Parr, Bill Maher show.
Parr and Maher. I love Bill Maher.
I do, too.
He's a serious Democrat, says exactly what he thinks.
I know.
I've never seen his show. I've seen him on Larry King
I think he moved to HBO. He was on ABC, syndicated. And they dropped him, and I think now it's HBO. So
he's on Larry King once a month or so. He's just very funny.
Yeah, he is.
Very funny, yeah.
Very clever, very ingenious guy.
Well, let's see. You were telling me about your adventures on the. Tell us the story of you walking around on the roof with your cane. Yes.
Yeah, well, out here in El Paso, we're in the desert.
Yes.
And we don't need refrigerated air. We use swamp coolers, what we call swamp coolers, where we have, as one of my running buddies out here who's a physicist says, the most god-awful creation man ever thought of taking electricity and water and putting them in the same unit and put them on the roof of your house.
Ridiculous.
He said, that's got to be the dumbest thing I ever heard of.
Really?
Yeah. But that's what we all do. And we don't seem to have too many fires. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I had a pump go out on it. You have a pump that circulates the water to these pads that they're various materials made out of straw or Now they have a lot of synthetic materials that they're using, but the pump went out one day, and I usually have a buddy who has helped me with getting up there before, but he wasn't available, so I said, well, I'm going to have to get up there because it's too darn hot to go without it. So I knew where I had marked my ladder with some duct tape. The last time he and I went up there, I marked it at exactly where it should be raised. It's one of those sliding...
Extension ladder.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, aluminum. And so I knew exactly where it had to be at the, you know, about 18 inches above the edge of the roof.
Uh-huh.
So I put it up there and took my cane with me because I said, well, I'm going to have some way to find the end of that ladder sticking up when I come back. So I had it folded up in my hip pocket. And I went up there and I changed the pump out, put it in, and made sure, you know, that it was running and the water was getting it. I had to clean out the there's a little connection where the pump hose connects to this little plastic network of pipes that each one goes to a separate pad.
Uh-huh.
And that thing can get jammed up. In this case, it had a bunch of straw in there from the pads that had fallen into the water. And so I cleaned that out and hooked it back, and sure enough, it was pumping just fine. And I replaced the panel that where the pump was and started walking away, and I thought, man, I wish I had somebody down there on the ground to get a picture. This. In fact, I'm going to use this picture on my website, I think, when I get of a blind guy, you know, walking across a roof toward the edge of the roof. And It's got the tension and the suspense and everything in there that you want. Like,
with his cane.
Is he going to make it or what? You know?
Yeah.
Swinging my cane, walking toward the edge of the roof. I thought, I wish I had somebody with a camera to get this.
Now, this is a flat roof.
Flat roof. And I'm just stretching off across there, swinging my cane, looking for that ladder. This would be too cool, man. I've got to have a picture of this.
But wasn't anybody take a picture?
No, wasn't anybody handy to take a picture. I was by myself. So
yeah.
I got a friend. I'm going to get him to come over. We'll do a retake.
Who'll know, right?
Yeah, I want a picture of that.
In a sense, Burns, then what y'all have to do is the humidity's so low, y'all have to add water to the air.
You got it.
That's crazy. Yeah, I could tell you my roof story. My wife's name is Emma Lee. I refer to her as the warden, but I had a roof repair job on a real steep roof, and it was like a story and a half house. So what I did is I used my extension ladder and climbed up on the lower part of the roof, and then I picked up my extension ladder to carry it around to get on the high part of the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when I came back to get down, I took the ladder back to the spot, and I was going to put it down, and it fell over.
Oh.
So then there I was on the roof, because my wife is in the house with the air conditioning on, and so I resorted to hollering down the vent pipes, Emily, Emily. And for some strange reason, after about 40 minutes of me sitting in there, she just happened to come outside. Now, I said, could you give me a hand here? And of course, she picked up the ladder, and I made my escape. But I considered jumping and stuff.
Oh, no. Boy, it's not a real safe thing to be doing. I was telling a friend about this, who's a Canadian friend of mine. And he was saying, oh, yeah, I've done the same thing, only with snow on the roof.
Man.
Yeah, really?
Oh, man.
Well, I think Phil Parr has a roof story that he could tell.
Well, we were living in Austin. John Bennett, I was living with John Bennett, and he was then married to Jo Helen at that time 100 years ago. And a lady friend of mine named Mary Frances, she was there, and... we'd had an argument or something. I don't remember. But anyway, I decided, half drunk about 2:00 in the morning, I'll get on the roof and work on my antenna. Well, I fell off. This is an old house on Sabine Street that they tore down. It's where the Irwin Center is now. 12-foot ceilings and a 6-foot attic. So it was about 20 feet.
Oh.
And I just felt myself going. I just hollered. You know, all I could do is say, hold, stand by. And off I went into the trees and, you know.
He said the last thing he remembers was the shingles tearing off in his hand.
As I was slipping off the roof. Boy, I got the sympathy vote, though.
Did you break anything?
No. They took me. I got up to, I don't know how I got up to Brackenridge. Was it Brackenridge Hospital? It's there over.
Walked.
I guess we walked up there, and I'm sure Mary Frances went with us. I got the sympathy vote that night, though.
I bet you did.
And I laid around for 2 or 3 days, but when you're young.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was 20 years old. I was invincible. Nothing could hurt me.
Right.
Car could have run over me, and I wouldn't have worried about it.
Bones are still flexible.
I don't get on the roof anymore. Last time I went up the ladder, and I got to the top, and I thought, no, I don't have to do this, and I'm not doing it. So I just got back down and got one of the kids
to
do it.
I like to get up on the roof. I always have. Even as a kid, I can remember we used to have a pitch roof, a peak roof in Austin.
Yeah.
When I grew up there, we had trees that would grow over the roof, and I was into throwing china berries. Man. We have these china berry wars for days. Every time I'd get up there, there was somebody, one of the neighborhood gossips would see me up. I can still hear them. Miss Taylor, he's up on the roof again. My mother would come out there. What are you doing?
Well, I liked it. I mean, I didn't mind it, but I don't have the nerve anymore. I've lost my... my nerve has gone away.
Oh, man. Must be age.
Must be, but you're the same age.
Yeah.
Pat's about the same. How are you, 60? You're 63?
Yeah.
Well, right. So am I. So yeah. We're
be 62 in September.
I was thinking.
Fiddler on the roof, man.
Fiddler on the roof. I was thinking we started together. You certainly pulled ahead of me. Very quickly, I think, but.
3 years in the eighth grade will do it every
3 years in the eighth grade will do it every time. Bob Young must have really liked me. He certainly kept me in junior high long enough.
He kept you there, right?
He did. I had Miss Hancock for English in the eighth grade 3 times, I think. I taught the class last time.
Did you graduate from there?
I did not. I quit them in 58. I told them I wasn't coming back, so they sent me a letter and told me not to come back. That would have been their style, wouldn't it?
So you quit before they fired you.
I don't know if they were going to fire me, but it was known that I'd already told everybody. I wasn't learning anything. I was fixing to be 18 years old. Mm-hmm. The only thing I was taking was meaningful was piano tuning, and I knew at age 18 that I wasn't going to make my living tuning pianos. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew it wasn't going to be that. So there wasn't really any point. I wasn't doing any good. I couldn't read Braille. I still can't. There wasn't any point in me staying.
All the education.
That was all. And sure enough, I've been a lucky guy. It's worked out for me. But it was just as good a chance it wouldn't. But no, I left it with him in 58 and went and sold brooms a while and ran across an old boy in Austin that had an electric bass. And I bought it and taught myself to play it. And the rest is history.
Yeah. I'm selling brooms with Henry Gonzalez.
I did. I sold brooms with Henry Gonzalez. I did. I did. Henry's passed. Oh, you were around Henry and later on in El Paso, I guess, right?
Well, up till maybe a couple of months before he died.
Yeah. Really?
Oh, yeah.
Henry and I got into it. We were selling brooms for this old boy, and Henry and the driver got in an argument about something. This guy's name was Burl Winneker, was the driver's name.
What a name.
He just pulled over and said, Henry, I'll kick your ass. And Henry said, by God, you won't. And they got out of the truck, and Henry gave that old boy a beating.
Man.
Henry whooped that old boy pretty bad. It was a while before we could get him to drive again. He was, you're 50 miles from home. You don't whoop the guy that's driving the car. Henry, that's a damn idiot. Henry wasn't thinking real good. Of course, Henry never was encumbered by the thought process too much.
I ran across a picture. Burns, I ran across a picture the other day. I have it. I'm going to make Phil a copy of it. But anyway, it is Phil Parr, a guy named James Duncan. Did you know him?
You know James. Sure you do.
And then Charles Alexander me and Henry Gonzalez sitting. And I'm all of like 17 or 18 years old, and we're drinking beer. I mean, the bottles are just all over the table. And right up above me, my head, is a sign that says, positively, no minors.
That's just some joint in Houston, I guess.
When I was, just a kid. How many years ago is that?
Hey, I thought about you guys a couple of times. I'll tell you a couple of quick stories, but... One thing, there's a commercial out on TV about a tool that I wondered if it looks like it's like a blind man's dream.
Yeah.
I wondered if y'all had heard about it or dealt with it or had any experience with it. It's called cold heat.
No, no, anything about it.
Soldering iron apparently that heats up only after when you touch it to what it is you want to solder, and it cools off like in seconds.
And really?
Thought, man, that would be something. Because, you know, usually you have to let old soldering iron lay around and
it's hot
and start smoking and smelling. And, but this thing apparently doesn't work until you touch it to the work you want. That's from the commercial, that's the way it sounds. I thought, well, this sounds like an ideal
tool. It would be. Where did you see this?
I've seen it a couple of times on TV. I think I wrote down the number, or I tried to get to my Braille note before the thing went off to get it down. It was 1995 and included a carrying case and a stripper, a wire stripper.
I would order one if I knew.
I think guys ought to check that out and see.
Well, email me the phone number, and I will.
Okay.
That might be something we'd want to talk about here on the show. It would be.
I would love to.
Cold heat. All right.
Oh, yeah. Cold heat. Yeah.
All right.
Other thing that made me think about you guys is I've got a buddy to die for a buddy in L.A. that I made when I was living out there, and we still keep in real close contact. He's an actor and he's a playwright. He's a technical consultant on a show that's coming out this fall. It's called a mid-season replacement show, and it's being done by Stephen Bochco, who you may or may not know did NYPD Blue and LA Law. He's done a lot of big time shows, and he's a technical consultant. It's about a blind cop. It's called Blind Justice.
No.
Keep an eye out for that.
But I know we know what you mean. We got your point.
Keep
an eye out for it.
This will tickle your fancy here.
Blind Justice.
Blind Justice. This is a TV, supposed to be a mid-season replacement. I guess if a show, craters halfway through the season, they throw these in.
Put this little thing in,
He's doing 13 episodes of it. He's the technical consultant, getting $2,500 per show.
Wow. Yeah.
Just as a consultant, right, to be there and say, what would a blind guy do if he did this? What would happen if...
And who is playing the blind guy? Do you know?
He told me, but I've forgotten.
God, you wouldn't want to get a real guy. Wouldn't, that's what I was going to say. You wouldn't want to get a real blind guy to do that now, would you? That'd be ignorant.
Here's the new one, and I don't think I'm breaking the confidence to tell you this, but there's a movie afoot, a feature film that... He went, in fact, I talked to him this weekend. He was going for a second audition with the director. He worked with an acting coach. And this was called, this is what made me think of you guys, it's called The Blind Bastards Club.
Really?
That's what the movie's going to be called.
The Blind Bastards Club.
Yeah.
Well, they could use all of us.
It's about a group of blind miscreants who hang around a bar and raise hell and cause them.
That's good.
You think it'll become fashionable to do movies about blind people? Now, wouldn't that be good?
I think it sounds like, and they're actually, now this is the first that I know of that they're actually going to use two blind, they've already hired a blind actress, and he's going for the blind actor part.
Really?
It'll be the first time they've actually used blind actors in a feature film that I know of.
That's great.
Well, isn't there not an actor named Tom Sullivan?
Yeah. I don't think Tom ever made a movie.
A feature, I think he did a TV movie.
Yeah, he's done some TV stuff.
Yeah, not a full...
I don't think he made a movie. They made a movie about him, but he wasn't in it.
Right.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But if you can see what I can hear, whatever.
Okay. It's interesting. I cannot imagine them setting the scene in a bar. I mean, blind guys in a bar? Whoever heard of such a thing?
Whoever.
I heard of such a thing. But when I heard that title, I thought, oh, I know those.
Thought of us, didn't you? Listen, you need to get on that bird and fly. Can you fly straight to Austin from El Paso?
Absolutely.
You need to do it, Burns. What do you got to do this weekend? Nothing.
Okay. Everybody's going to be there.
Yeah. We are. Don Pat and I are.
Huh?
Don Patterson and I are coming.
Yeah. Well, I've heard a lot of, I think Bobby's coming. Bobby Doyle's going to be there.
Tendrell said he was.
Yeah, that's what he told me.
Tommy Griffith, haven't seen him in years.
Tommy Allen
Griffith.
Talked
with him, haven't seen him in years.
I don't know about Curtis. And I don't know.
Curtis is coming.
Is he?
Absolutely. They're leaving Friday night. They'll be there Saturday.
Is he going to be there?
Who's that?
Kenneth
Hebert.
No, he's not. I think he's involved in a new relationship. I saw him 6 months ago, went to a little jam session where he was. He still plays good as he ever did.
Is that right?
Bobby Hicks is coming, who played sax with our little band. Is going to be there. Talked with him the other day. So it ought to be a good jam session. It really should be. And you need to be there.
Well, why don't you email me about where you're going to stay?
Let me find it, Lou Ann. I'll do that in the morning, sir.
Okay, you got my email.
I have your email, and I'll be in touch. And we thank you, and watch
hey,
that.
It's been a pleasure, guys, Don, Tom.
Yeah.
Watch that wandering around on the roof with your cane, sir.
That's right.
I walk slowly and carefully.
Carry a long stick. I'll talk to you in the morning. Burns Taylor from El Paso, Texas, friend.
Appreciate it.
Back with more of the Blind Handyman in just a sec. Hang on.
Houston, Texas. We'll record our 100th Blind Handyman Show, and you're invited to the celebration. We'll arrive Friday, November 5th at the Sheraton on JFK Boulevard. Saturday, we'll spend the day talking about issues related to blindness. Then Saturday night, it's on to live music and karaoke. Sunday morning at 11 a.m., we'll record our 100th Blind Handyman Show, and we've got something special planned for Sunday afternoon. Then Sunday night, it's more live music and karaoke. A great time to meet old friends and make new ones. For more information, call 936-634-9500 or email philparr@txucon.net. We'll see you in Houston in November. We promise you a great hotel, a good time, and perfect weather. Call 936-634-9500 or email philparr@txucon.net.
Are listening to the Blind Handyman, the talk of the blind community. Our email address is blindhandyman@hotmail.com. If you would like to be a part of the show, leave us a phone number and we will contact you soon. Now here's more of today's show with Phil Parr.
That's my dog Frankie. She's having a water problem.
Having an attack.
You know, yesterday I was building a little shelf, and I have discovered through building different things that sighted people don't like to see the edge of a piece of wood. So if you build a shelf, you need to remember it has to be trimmed around. You put a little trim around it where they see people see the flat side of wood. They don't want to see that edge. That obviously looks bad. I didn't know that. A blind person wouldn't. Totally blind person. So I was going to do some trim. Cut this little shelf, and I was going to cut some little trim and run it across the router table. Well, the blade I had in there didn't suit me. So I decided to change the blade on my router. And it takes an act of Congress. You've got to hunt the wrenches, first of all. I found one. I never did find the other one. I just sort of substituted for the other wrench.
Uh-huh.
But you got to take the router out of the router table, lock the wrench on the bottom, and then turn the little thing up. I mean, there must be an easier way to change router blades than that. Do they make a router now? It looked like they'd make a router that had a hole in the shank of the blade and a hole in the collar that held it on. You just push a pin through there, and it snaps. Okay, bingo. Your router blade is... What I'm saying is I put a router blade on that didn't quite suit me, but it took me so long to do it that I was unwilling to change. You know, it's just...
Yeah, change it again.
Yeah, it's just, do they make a router now?
That's the only kind I've ever seen, the one just like you're talking about.
And the change, the chuck size you're talking about, too, you have to turn that screw the opposite...
You have to hold it with one wrench and turn it with the other wrench.
In the opposite direction.
Yes.
And then to change the size, like a... I've never seen just a plug-and-play router. I don't know if it would be because of the speed, you know, the high intensity of the speed that it wouldn't work. I have no idea.
It's like the coffee can. How long did it take them to develop that plastic coffee can?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
I
just can't. It's just weird to me that is so complicated in 2004.
They say, though, and that's so sad, but they say it about painting, but I think it would go with anything. The preparation to paint takes longer than the painting. And that was always the problem I found with the router. The preparation to use the damn router took longer than what you were going to do.
Getting it ready.
There is no way to tell what a router blade is going to do to a piece of wood unless you put the blade in the router and run a piece of wood across it.
Try a piece of wood.
So if you try one, you think, well, this isn't exactly what I want. But, you know, I don't have an hour to change it again. You know, I can't conceptualize what that blade is going to do to the piece of wood.
Yeah, you got to run a test.
Without putting it in there. And I've got some little 2x4 blocks that I save junk wood. I've got under my workbench is up to almost the bench with just pieces of wood that you can use for just that ends of 2x4s and things that you can just run across and see what the router will do.
Yeah.
And the one I got in there isn't exactly what I want, but I'll be damned, I don't have time.
Yeah, don't have time to change it again.
I've got a jillion router bits, but, it just looks like somebody would simplify that, and if they have, I want to know about it.
The old router is an amazing tool, though, the things that really it can do.
It'll sure make some nice trim.
Watch those fingers, man. How quick could a router take off a finger?
That's the question of the day. I ended up cutting one piece of trim too short and just said to hell with it and put some quarter round around the edge of the shelf, though.
Yeah.
That's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, Donald, tell us about your paint gun.
Well, out at Bear Claw, that's what we call our place, we had a fence put up. 3/4 of it was chain link, and then across the front, that was visible from the road, about 100 feet of picket fence. And, of course, I tell everybody, if you set out to paint picket fence, remember it's got 12 sides. It just seemed like you couldn't paint. Every time you'd start painting, you'd see a place you missed. But anyway, we painted by hand probably the two and in some places three coats of primer paint, and we did it, my wife and I, with brush and roller. Probably had 20, 24, 25 hours of labor invested. And so I broke down the guy who put up the fence originally. He told me, he said, you ought to invest in a little Wagner spray gun. Did $98. The wide shot, they call it, and it'll spray pretty wide. And painted front and back of the picket fence all sides in about 3 hours with the coat of paint.
That's amazing.
What keeps pressure on it?
It's just electric. It has a little piston. It's very easy to disassemble. And I assume if there is any kind of a little air compressor or generator, or I'm not sure what's in there, I guess this piston going back and forth, it's like an electrical-driven combustion engine of sorts.
It's got to be a little compressor.
Yeah. And so anyway, and it's very quiet. You could almost, on the low speed, which is what I used, it has a selection switch that shows three, like a wide, for real wide, and they have a picture of a house, obviously, that you would stand back 20 inches or 18 inches and spray. Then it has another picture of like a little a wagon, which would be closer, and then it had a picture of a window frame, like the little one-by-one parts of a window that would separate panes. Yeah. And this would be something you would be 8 to 10 inches away to paint. And when you're on that setting, this is the selector switch, then you have a knob that you can also decrease or increase the air pressure,
okay,
or the spray pressure. And it has 9 settings, and it says in the instructions, set it on about 5. I think on one of them I set it on 4, and then because of the thickness of the material, I increased it to about 6. And I used the little window frame setting. I was painting 3.5-inch wide pickets, 4 feet tall, plus the rails and everything. But anyway, the little gun worked. And on that setting, it sounds like you could carry on a conversation and paint.
That's
at
neat.
The same time.
Okay, and the stream is about how wide on that setting?
It's about from 8 inches where they recommend. The stream is, I mean, it's not a stream, it's a spray, a mist.
Yeah.
It's about 5 inches wide.
Wow.
Okay.
I mean, it painted the whole picket sides and front. I was painting basically the fronts, and Emily touched up what I missed. She went along 100 feet of fence this morning in about 30 minutes. She just every once in a while there'd be a little spot I missed or just the mist didn't go.
Now, if you're painting a picket fence and you're kind of guiding yourself with your other hand so you kind of know where you're shooting, And but you can't see. How far down the picket would you go? That paint would drip down. You need to go clear to the bottom.
You go all the way to the bottom. In other words, and they tell you, which I did, to mow the grass first, and I didn't put any paper down, any masking on the ground, but I did put I masked off the entire, I bought a roll of paper that was 140 feet long and, 4 foot, it's probably 30 inches wide. And so I used two rolls of it, and I masked behind me. In other words, where I was shooting into the paper. I put it behind the pickets.
Paint wouldn't go everywhere.
Well, the problem is, it's not the paint goes everywhere, but the wind blows, and so if you don't have a mask behind you, the wind blows the mist back at you.
That makes sense
and
to me.
So I painted, and you squeeze the gun. I have two pickets in front of me. I'm going to start at the top on the left picket. So you squeeze the trigger at the top, and you paint, and you just go in a down movement. And it says not to move your wrist, to move your whole arm, your body. I was sort of standing and then would squat down. And you start the trigger action, the spraying movement, at the top, and you go all the way to the bottom, and then you let off the trigger. Don't go up and down.
Yeah.
All right, and then on the next picket, on the right picket, I would start at the bottom and go up. And I just did that. I went down one picket
and up the next one over.
In a kind of a constant but a fairly slow, I don't know.
So you were doing deep knee bends all the time.
Yeah, or kind of in a hunched over kind of. I had a little plastic stool, actually, that would, if I sat on it, was very comfortable. Yeah. And I could take in about four pickets and then move my stool. And so I'd go down and then up. And then down, and then up, and I'd stop, move over.
Move your stool. I got your point.
And I'm telling you, I did it probably, I say 3 hours, but it could have really been closer to 2.5 hours. The masking, there again, preparation
probably
to paint takes longer.
Yeah.
And Emily came and helped me, and we had my staple gun, and I rolled this paper out and stapled it to the top of the pickets, and it worked like a champ.
We got to go. Paint gun. I think I won't buy one.
Wagner.
Thank you, Don
Patterson.
Enjoyed it.
All right.
Thank you, sir. Our thanks to Burns Taylor. Don't forget us in November. 634-9500. Call me about it. I see, said the blind man, as he picked up his hammer and saw.
The Blind Handyman is produced by Out of Market Productions. 1604 Southwood Drive, Lufkin, Texas. Phone 634-9500.